Bhavet,
Bhavet,
Sarva,
Sarva,
Sukhrit,
Sukhrit,
Priyatmana,
Priyatmana,
Yate, Yate Taresham,
Yate Taresham,
Pritag,
Pritag,
Atma, Atmanam,
Atmanam,
Satam,
Satam,
Adidrisho,
Adidrisho,
Yad,
Yad,
Vapur,
Vapur,
Adhutam,
Adhutam,
Dina,
Dina,
Nate Ravindaksha Pado Pasarpanam,
Nate Ravindaksha Pado Pasarpanam,
Vishabhavet Sarva Suhrit Priyatmana,
Vishabhavet Sarva Suhrit Priyatmana,
Yate Tare Shambhritagatmanam Satam,
Yate Tare Shambhritagatmanam Satam,
Adidrisho Yad Vapurad Bhutam Hina,
Adidrisho Yad Vapurad Bhutam Hina,
Naha,
Naha,
Never,
Never,
Te,
Te,
of your lordship,
of your lordship,
Aravinda Aksha,
Aravinda Aksha,
my lord,
my lord,
whose eyes are like the petals of a lotus,
whose eyes are like the petals of a lotus,
Pada Upasarapanam, worship of the lotus feet,
worship of the lotus feet,
Marisha,
Marisha,
useless,
useless,
Bhavet,
Bhavet,
can become,
can become,
Sarva Suhrit,
Sarva Suhrit,
the friend of everyone,
the friend of everyone,
Priya,
Priya,
dear to everyone,
dear to everyone,
Atmanaha,
Atmanaha,
the super soul of everyone,
the super soul of everyone,
Yata,
Yata,
as,
Itaresham,
of others, the demigods, Pritak
Atmanam,
living entities who have material bodies,
different from the soul,
Satam, of those who are spiritually fixed,
Adidrisha,
you have manifested,
Yat,
that,
Bapu,
body,
Adbhutam,
wonderful, he,
indeed,
Naha,
unto us.
Translation. O my Lord, possessing eyes like the petals of a lotus, the worship of the demigods who are in the bodily conception of life is fruitless in all respects. But because you are the supreme friend and dearmost supersoul of everyone, worship of your lotus feet is never useless. You have therefore manifested your form as a fish. Purport. The demigods like Indra, Chandra, and Surya are ordinary living entities, who are differentiated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord expands Himself through the living entities, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. His personal Vishnu Tattva forms, which are all spiritual, are called Svamsa. And the living entities who are differentiated parts are called Vibhinamsa. Some of the Vibhinamsa forms are spiritual, and some are a combination of matter and spirit. The conditioned souls in the material world are different from their external bodies made of material energy. Thus, the demigods living in the upper planetary systems and the living entities living in the lower planetary systems are of the same nature. Nonetheless, those living as human beings on this planet are sometimes attracted to worshipping the demigods in the higher planetary systems. Such worship is temporary, as the human beings on this planet have to change their bodies. Tata de hantara praptihi. The living entities known as Indra, Chandra, Varuna, and so on will also have to change their bodies in due course of time. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, antavat tu phalam tesham tad bhavat yalta medesham. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Kamaistais ter vrittigyana prapadyante nyadevata. Those who do not know the position of the demigods are inclined to worship the demigods for some material purpose. But the results of such worship are never permanent. Consequently, here it is said, yate tare sham pritagatmanam satam. Pado Prasar Panam Mrisha Bhavet. In other words, if one is to worship someone else, he must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then his worship will never be fruitless. Swapam apyasya dhanamasya trayate mahato hayat. Even a slight attempt to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a permanent asset. Therefore, as recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tyaktva swa dharmam charanam bhujam hare. One should take to the worship the lotus feet of Lord Hari, even if this means giving up the so-called occupational duty assigned because of the particular body one has accepted. Because worship in terms of the body is temporary. It does not bear any permanent fruit. But worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives immense benefit. So here King Satyavrata is commenting on the position of worshipping the demigods. That this worship of the demigods actually is temporary and it is fruitless. It doesn't really give any benefit. Of course, one may say, but you worship the demigods, so many nice material benefits are there. But we see that then there's a whether one gets or not, within time they are lost. And since the soul is looking for eternal happiness, then temporary happiness will not give happiness. Of course, some may say, but then we can just string together so many temporary happinesses, then we'll always be happy. Right? Means always there, you perform good activities, you'll be happy. Right? You perform pious activity, you'll be happy. And you perform enough pious activities that will go into next life. So then when you take birth again, you'll be happy then also. And like this, when you perform more pious activities, then you'll keep so this eternally you can be happy. So it sounds nice. But the problem is that there is nothing, everything in the material world is balanced. So you never get pure happiness or pure distress. So there is no such thing as happiness. How much you're happy, that much distress will also balance it. So this is the difficulty. So one cannot actually be happy here. This is the problem. Is that we are being encouraged to be happy here by so many persons. But actual happiness cannot be found here. So even if one worships the devatas, and from the devatas one may get some benediction, still one is not happy. Right? Hiranyakashipu, he got a very nice benediction from Lord Brahma. He still was not happy. He still suffered. He still had to die. You know, and then there will be the reactions to that enjoyment. Because then if you're saying, yes, I'll be happy, I'll do the pious activities, I will enjoy. But then along with that, you have to also, then what about your enjoyment? Is that pious? Right? You receive some money. You enjoy that money. Did you enjoy it piously? You have a family. Did you enjoy that piously? Your house, your wealth, everything. Did you enjoy that piously? If not, there'll be a reaction. And that reaction will be outside of just the normal things of how the material world works. It'll be extra. So therefore, you cannot guarantee. So that means, and how you will enjoy it. How you will enjoy it? As a human being, then you always have to restrict yourself. Otherwise, then one is not naturally situated in goodness. And the mind will only be peaceful in goodness. And there can only be happiness if there's peace. So one will always be restricted in having to perform so much charity, austerity, and all these different things. So one's happiness will be restricted, material happiness. And then one can say, no, but the result of the piety will all go to the heavenly planets. But at some point that will run out, you have to come back here again. So therefore we see that the process of this karma kanda cannot actually give lasting happiness. It can't give. And also the more you have, then the loss of it creates greater unhappiness, greater displeasure. You have a little bit and you lose it, then what to do? Let us say you're walking down the road and you see You see 10 pies sitting on the road, you know, let's say, okay, we have to, inflation, we have to increase the example, right? You don't even get 10 pies coins. So you find 25 pies sitting on the road. You pick it up, you put it in your pocket. Then later in the day, something comes up, you need 25 pies. You look in your pocket, it's not there. And then, okay, what to do? There's no anxiety, you know? But finding 25 pies, you didn't get that much happiness. You were not, you know, overly elated and rolling on the ground in ecstasy. No, it's just, oh, nice. And then when it's gone, oh, it's gone. It's balanced. Right? But then if someone came along and gave you a lakh of rupees, and then you're playing, oh, do this, that, so many things like that, and then you go and look for that money, it's gone. Then there's so much anxiety. And the more you increase it, the drawer, or more, then the greater the anxiety. So then, in this way, it's fruitless, actually. So the concept that one will enjoy in the material world, people, we've heard about it. If we really think about it, it's not been there. Right? Even situations, we find, mostly like we think today, we're not really that happy. You know, if this was adjusted, that, so many things, then I'd be happy. Right? But if we think about it, 10 years ago we were in the same, or 20 years ago in the same situation. And now when we look back 10 years ago, yeah, it was nice, you know, we did this, and we were with the friends here, and all. Everything bad you forget. Whole year of bad, you know, we had a nice time one time with your friends, you did something, or there was a one nice festival. So you remember what was good. Everything else you forget. You know, and then now it's not right, though one may be happier than one was before. But one does, it's not able to seek. So the happiness of this world cannot be appreciated. It's heard about. Prahlad Maharaj makes this point, Shruti Sukhat. We've heard about it. Shruti, yes, there's happiness here. We have heard. Everyone is looking very enthusiastically. But unfortunately, it has not yet been found. Like that. Because as soon as you get, then there's an anxiety, it'll be lost, or you get, you want more. I remember once somebody came along, it was here, India, and they brought, you know, some Western devotee, and they brought some special sweets from the West. Very rare. The person had seen them when he was a kid. And they gave him one. And he immediately just stuffed it in his mouth and said, I want another one. Like that. So, okay. Gave him another, and came, took another one. He just put it, I want another one. Because he knew that there were many there. So he was just trying to get how many he could. But what was in his mouth, he wasn't even aware of. He was just thinking, you know, these sweets are so good, because he remembers them when he was a kid. But when he put it in his mouth, there was not a moment that he enjoyed it. It was simply, you know, it's such a good thing, I got to get as many of these as I can. So he didn't enjoy them. You know, plus the whole atmosphere, the other person who was giving, thinking, oh, he'll appreciate this, was very disappointed. Because such a, you know, if the person thought it was valuable and rare, then why did he deal with it like a 13-year-old kid, which was the last time he ate those things? You know, because that's what they would have been doing, sitting on the street corner there in the Bronx. And, you know, when one of their friends came along, he'd take the, hey, give me another one. You know. So, you know, the enjoyment was the same. No enjoyment. You just knew this was good. Why? Because everybody else said it was good. But they've never experienced it themselves. So Satyavrata is giving that point, is that it can't be, you can't get benefit from the demigods. Therefore, only by worshipping the Supreme Lord, then you can be happy. So then to get that, then the Lord has come in this form as Matsya, so that the pastimes could be manifested. And then in this way, then the devotees could appreciate, they could absorb themselves, they could enjoy these pastimes, you know, enjoy thinking about them and everything. And then that would make them, that actually, one becomes happy with that. We have to remember that the devatas, that they are also like us. Same living entities, just somehow or another, due to the arrangement of the modes of nature, they were inclined at that time towards pious activities. They performed those activities. They came to the position of a demigod from the result of those pious activities. But their potency to make people happy is no more than any other living entity in the material world, which is nothing. They're empowered with a certain potency of the Lord. So if there's anything we feel that maybe we can get from them, it still is coming from the Lord. The Lord has given them a certain potency, a certain jurisdiction, a certain authority. And then they're able to give something in connection with that. So actually, what is respectable in the Devata is the Lord's potency. And what is actually going to make us happy is the Lord's potency. So therefore, the intelligent person then doesn't waste his time indirectly worshipping the potencies of the Lord found in the demigods, but in ignorance of that actual potency. But they directly go to the Supreme Lord. And then by that, then they are happy. So the living entities who are spiritual and have a spiritual form, worship of those persons, like the Lord, we can be situated transcendently and be happy. But those living entities that are materially embodied, then worship of them, thinking we will get material benefits, then is not a good proposal. Any questions on this?
Sometimes the devotee, after practicing or trying to practice Krishna consciousness for a number of years, will get the feeling that he was happier before he started this whole Krishna consciousness business. And this feeling or thought process leads to stop practicing Krishna consciousness, to pick up and feel life again. So I remember when I was a new devotee, and there was a couple of older devotees that were in the Bhakta floor, 50-50 people in New York, and they were making jokes about, well, they're happy now, but just wait a few years and then they'll find out what really goes on. So I'm wondering if you could comment on that. Philosophically, we of course can recognize that there's some type of maya that is in. But why does this type of thing happen?
It's a few, how to say, a few ways one could approach it. One is that happiness, first we have to define what is happiness. So generally, according to this definition, it would mean material happiness. You know, elation. That would be what would be considered. You know, something, some pleasant situation. It means there's some pleasant situation for the senses, for the mind, you know, for the intelligence, for the ego, like this. So that if we define that as happiness, then we see, let's take that happiness. What does that mean? So we've seen Prabhupada defines that as removal of pain. So when there's hunger, when we remove that by the process of eating, then we consider that a pleasurable experience. Or it's very hot, we go into a cool place. In seeing the change from the cold to the hot, hot to the cold, we experience happiness. But once we're full, and once we've cooled down, we're no longer happy. So happiness in the material world is actually only seeing the change from one thing to the other, from one opposite to the other. In that movement, then we find some happiness. But when it gets to the place, then there's no happiness, because it just becomes regular, ordinary. So then if we look at that, then we can see how this concept would come up. Is that when one joins Krishna consciousness, one is happy because one can see the difference between the two, material life and spiritual life. And if one, especially if one is joined because of anxiety, and you know, and in Kali Yuga that's a pretty standard position of most living entities, is that it's a very anxiety-ridden situation. So besides one's possible quest for spiritual upliftment, there is hope that there will be a reduction in material anxiety. So, though one is gaining spiritually, one is able to perceive the change from material anxiety to lack of material anxiety, at least in proportion. And so then one perceives that as great happiness. So the substantial happiness is coming from the performance of devotional service. But we're not necessarily accustomed to that. But in the beginning, naturally, there's a taste of that, because we're also able to compare the spiritual happiness compared to material happiness. And we can see the difference. And so then we appreciate both the material happiness going, which then by definition creates happiness. I mean, the material distress going, so that by material definition means happiness. And we can sense that there's another kind of happiness that is very dynamic compared to the other. So because of these perceptions, you know, very dynamic perceptions or very dramatic perceptions, then we consider happy. But then as we progress in devotional service, then the kind of experience in the material world gets far away. And one doesn't see the two. One's material distresses aren't, we don't see them dramatically going, they're basically gone. So then you don't experience something so great. And compared to other spiritual happinesses, the spiritual happiness maybe we get today may be the same, maybe more, maybe less, depending upon our seriousness or pursuit of devotional service. If we're steady, then it may be great, gradually increasing. If we're not steady, it may be there, not there. Or if we're offensive, it may be there or going down. So then, in comparison, it doesn't seem to be the same. And then couple that with the nature of the soul being ananda or happiness, the soul cannot relate to distress. That's why distress is a problem. Therefore, distress in the material world is always forgotten. If it was a very big distress, then one remembers for a while. Like there's still people that are remembering, you know, about experiences in, you know, Auschwitz and other things, you know, to today. But the people in general have already forgotten about it. But maybe some few who went, they're still there, you know, they still have some difficulty. But otherwise, then one forgets. Therefore, even though the situation was not one of great happiness, many years later you think it was nice. You're with your friends, big trouble, fighting, this, that. And then when you're with those people, you know, 20 years, 30 years later, you sit back and look at it. Yeah, you know, a bunch of kids, you know, crazy, you know, harassing each other. You know, hey, you remember the time when I did that to you? And oh, yeah, that really freaked me out. You know, but I got it back, you know. And so it's suddenly seen as a great time, when at the time it was not great. It was sort of, yeah, this guy, how can you do this? You know, he's supposed to be different. So we forget the distress. So that's why we constantly need reminding. That's why again and again these points are made in the Bhagavatam and in the spiritual literature. And by associating with devotees, by contemplating, then we're able to see, yes, that it's like this. And that can help inspire us. That's just looking at it just from the point of, we're not taking, you know, positive aspects of, you know, the devotional service or others. We're just taking the principles of how it could arise, you know, due to just the perceptions. Is that okay?
Of course, that it seems that if someone has experienced, you know, a real strict with this Krishna consciousness and experience is a good taste and a spiritual platform, mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter.
Yes. That should be the thing, is that one is rightly situated in devotional service, practicing, avoiding the offenses, then the taste and all that will be always increasing. It will be. But the difficulty generally comes is lack of determination or offenses. So lack of determination, we don't perform the things that will make us happy, or the offenses will reduce what happiness we already have. You know, the taste we have, it will reduce that. You know, and then material desire will come, so that creates anxiety. And then we feel the anxiety and think I was happier before because of forgetfulness of it.
So whose fault is it? if someone falls into that. Oftentimes you see that someone will blame somebody else.
Yeah.
Maybe blame the institution, blame my husband, blame my company president.
Yeah. It's generally the tradition is we will blame someone else, but the actual responsible person is herself. It means the temple president was not there in the beginning and told us, hey, what are you doing? You know, all this Krishna consciousness here in the spiritual world, you know, I mean, there's this great place called material world. You know, you can go down there, you know, be, you know, do whatever you want. I mean, here you gotta follow in the footsteps of the other residents of Vrindavan. Now you can, you know, make blaze your own trail, you know, like this. We've made the decision. We came ourselves. And at every moment where we have the opportunity, we could go back to Godhead. We could take up the thing and change our consciousness. So ultimately it's our choice, our responsibility. Though one can see, it's there for a few reasons, but one of them is so we have an excuse why to be here in the material world. Because if it's someone else's fault, then what can I do? Right? What can I do? You know, if it's someone else's fault, then what can I do? Now, the situation may be there, but we have to remember is that any situation we're in, the situation is created by our previous desire. The situation is called Phulan Mukhi. It's the one of the stages of karma. You perform an activity that sprouts a seed. The seed then grows into a plant. And that plant then creates the environment in which you will receive your karma. Then, once it's all set, you get it. So to have that temple president who you felt didn't deal right, or that husband or wife, or that person who you feel let you down, but that's just already been arranged. Because we see other people have been in the same situation and not felt let down. They understood that, you know, Krishna is teaching you something. You know, Prabhupada could have, you know, I'm here, I'm trying to serve my Guru Maharaj, I'm trying to write these books and do all this, and then my wife sells my book for the, you know, some biscuits. You know, so why should I, you know, deal with this? No, but it's just he pushes on. He writes the Gita, it's lost. The whole Gita, it's not that he was partly, he finished it. Right? He had already written a systematic study of it. The book was gone. You know, probably another packet of biscuits.
tea.
So then, of course, somebody made the point is, we have to give his wife credit. She was the first one to distribute Prabhupada's books. Okay. Heard someone make that point a few years back. Of course, then there's the point Rupa Goswami makes, a favorable devotional service. So ultimately it's us, because we've created the situation we find ourselves in. Then it's natural, due to previous mentalities, we're going to react in that way. When somebody deals with, we've dealt roughly with someone, a situation has created, people will be rough with us. So a natural thing is whatever, you know, is when people are rough with us, then we'll become disheartened, then we'll become rough like this. But that's just the way it works. It's just the opposites reacting on each other. So then, ultimately, if we want to save ourselves dynamically, then we just have to sit down and look, okay, what's going on? What is Krishna trying to show? What is he trying to teach? What is happening? And then take what's useful of it, you know, be humble, move on. Then we find is that, yes, materially we don't necessarily find justice. Materially we don't find perfection. But we find happiness in Krishna consciousness. Satisfaction in that. Bali Maharaj lost everything. He could say so many things that were unjust. Why did Krishna come as a little Brahman? Why didn't he just come to him as the Supreme Lord? Why as a Brahman did he come as a little Brahman? He could have come as a full-sized adult. Right? Why did he ask for 3 steps of land? He could have asked for the universe. you know, it would have been much more glorious. You know, says you know, if he comes and says, you know, I want, you know, you're a Brahmin, I want to give you something in charity. So he says, yes, I've come on behalf of the Devatas, and they are the rightful, you know, heirs of the universe. So you've taken that unrightfully, and so you please give that in, back to me in charity. My, what I want is benediction, is for you to reinstate. He could have done like that, and because he had asked and he had said, I'll give it. It would have been, yes, he would have felt good as a king giving like that. He can always win it back again later. Like that, it would have fit the spirit. But everything was a trick, one after another. Then he says, take more than 3 steps of land. It's nothing. No, we can't be satisfied with 3 steps. We won't be satisfied with the whole universe, which he wasn't. He took the whole universe, and he still wasn't satisfied. So he already predicted, you know, like this. So everything was a trick. Not only that, is because he had been tricked, he shouldn't have been punished. Okay, you got back the thing, but then why was he bound and said, you said you'd give 3 steps, where's the 3rd step? You're lying. You know, you're the cheater. No, like this. So, all this, you call yourself a kshatriya, you're a religious person. You know, all the people in your family have been great personalities, and look at you. You know, and it's insult to injury to everything. But he just takes it very nicely, and he becomes more, he's happy. Because he's not looking for material perfection. So the difficulty comes is because of our conditioning, long conditioning. You know, it's just habit. We're so conditioned to material happiness. So therefore, then we're always looking that, you know, adjust things, make things right, do this, do that. And then that will make us happy. When actually it won't. It's never made us happy, never made anybody happy. But it's our duty to perform those duties according to our situation. So if we are a householder, we're supposed to adjust things to make things good for the family. It's our duty to do that. But we understand that doing it is not actually going to create our happiness. It won't really create our happiness. So therefore one has to understand what is actual happiness. You know? So described before is you can't actually be happy with anything material world, because happiness comes from relationship. Ananda means relationship.
Well, come listen to your classroom. Huh? Come listen, mind you get close.
Do that if you said something like that.
When you explain that sometimes we don't stop performing certain activities that will bring us happiness. Yeah. How important is to it that Buddha has been put by devotees? Sometimes in the West, many Buddhists have the tendency to eat, sometimes especially if we have to go out, eat from Pizza Hut because it's vegetarian, or eat something in the way because it's vegetarian. But I see in India, the body also, they eat food cooked by Shukranis. Shukranis, the mentality is always lamenting.
It means whatever food you eat, it influences the mind. Lord Chaitanya makes that point. Vishayar anakaile dushtohaiman. Means if you take the vishay, means enjoyer. So if you eat the food of an enjoyer, it will affect the mind. If you pay for it, then that means if it's for free, you get the influence of the mind and the karma. If you pay for it, it's purified of the karma, but you get the influence of the mentality. That you can't get rid of. Mm-hmm. So like that. And then you have to see, that's also if it's been purified. And if you don't know, you know, it's like you're in control of the environment, so it's pure, then you're only dealing with consciousness. If it's something outside, then unless you see it has been cooked or stuff like that, like in the train station, they cook right on the platform, we see it, it's purified by that and by giving the money. But the consciousness still comes. But if you just buy it in a package, you know, then, and it's cooked, then it's, that you don't know what's there. So then it may not be so pure. So that will also affect. So best is always to avoid such things. Try to engage the lifestyle. Sometimes in preaching, traveling, sometimes it's unavoidable. One tries to, you know, as minimal as possible, you know, avoid you know, things, because main thing is grains is what carry the consciousness. Other things don't carry, but then you have to see to its purity. If it's not pure, or it's old, stale, this, that, it will affect. Because we're conditioned. We're affected by the body. It means the subtle body will affect the gross. The gross can also affect the subtle. Like you see, even though you're sick, if something happens that makes you very happy, you forget you're sick. Same time as you may be happy, then you get sick, then you lose your happiness. So it goes both ways. So one has to be careful, because if the mind goes, then the body will also have a, and the other way around.
So. Just philosophically, we're sort of offering the, whatever we buy, it's like one place, doesn't it?
Well, the thing is when also there's the point is in offering it, it's a matter of what Krishna eats is a devotion. And so then how much devotion, one has to see how much devotion can be put together in those kind of situations. You know, if you know, why use those things? If you could do something else, then one has to see. I mean, there's certain things that they're considered, how you say, to get that preparation, certain aspects means a raw preparation. It has to be many times prepared. Something like puffed rice, you know, or chira. These things, they have to be made by a process. So then what you do with them at that point, then that's what is what's considered. So if you get some puffed rice, it's plain, you buy from the people who have a stock, then you take it and then you do something with it, and it's there. But if you buy puffed rice, it's already been cooked. It means it's already been made into puffed rice, then they put spices, this, that. That will carry the consciousness. Like that. So there are some things that are, but if something's actually been cooked, then that's a problem. You know, or like you have the grain, they husk the grain, so that doesn't carry. You know, or they split the grain, that doesn't carry. Or they grind it into flour, that doesn't carry. So when they make the thing that's the raw material, but when that is taken to the next step of being cooked into a preparation, you know, plain mudi is not considered a preparation. Plain chira is not considered. Gur is not considered.
Yeah. What is pasta
standard? Well, pasta generally you buy it, it's uncooked. Okay. You know, so they take the wheat, they grind it like this, like that. So
it's formed into the shell, is there some kind of process? I don't know.
That I know of, it's done raw, like that. But still, it won't be as good as making it yourself. You know, you get the flour, it's in a more pure state, it's only been handled once. Then that guy buys the flour, and then, you know, by some process, turns it into, you know, those things. Like that. So it's gone through two things. So it's not considered as pure. Just like twice boiled, parboiled rice is not as pure as unboiled rice. Because it's the person has boiled it to make it into parboiled rice. Parboiled rice is not a preparation, but it has been cooked to get it to that stage, so it's not as pure like that. You know, especially it's boiling, it's not some other process. But it's not fine, yes.
If you buy some food from outside, like from a Shudrani or something, and you offer it to Krishna, does it become pure again?
It becomes, yes, but at the same time, it depends upon the situation that you're offering it in. Means if that's all that you have available, then that consideration is there. Though you will see, it will have some effect on the consciousness. But if you could have other alternatives, but due to laziness or due to preference to these kind of things, then you'll see it will affect more. Right? So like that. You always see it affects. Even you go to, you go and, you know, eat it, you go to, let's say, nice pious people's houses, and eat there, it still affects the consciousness. Like that. So food is very important. Yes?
Somebody, I have it in my dichotomy in my mind. Can we not have the strengthening of spiritual life through the materialistic life? What I'm trying to say is that if you use in materialistic life in a positive direction, in a right direction, can we not hasten the process of spiritualism and strengthen it further and come to the closer the consciousness of Krishna consciousness that we're teaching about? Yeah.
Yes, we can, but we have to define what is a good way, what is progressive. That has to be defined.
Yeah, but only Ramana is finding it clear that you are not defining that part. You know. You are only saying that, you are not saying that you don't go to the materialistic life, you are not denying that. You know. But you are not defining it either. So if you define that part, that is the right way to use the materialistic life for the strengthening of the spiritual path, then I think it will be path much easier.
Yeah, means the definition is given in the Gita, is that you follow that materialistic path according to the direction given by God. You don't make up your own path. Not only that, you do it for the pleasure of the Lord, and that the result is for the pleasure of the Lord. Then it's progressive. Like that. But we see, karma nyeva dikadaste. You have a right to do your duty. Ma phalesu kadachana. The fruit's not yours. The fruit belongs to God. Ma karma phalahetur bur. You're not the cause. Never think you're the cause. Because I worked so hard, then we made so much money. No. The ability to work came from God. You may have used it, but the ability came from God. And the whole mechanism in the material world is arranged by God. Right? You go to the machine, put in the coin, and then push the button, and then you get what you wanted from it. Can you say you produced that thing? No, you just followed the process. You put in the coin and that, but the other person said that's what you have to do. Right? They say put the coin, push the button. And you did it, then naturally you get it, because they set it up, we didn't set it up. So don't be attached to not doing your duty. If the fruit's not ours, why I should do? That was our genius idea. So that's the thing. So you have to follow it according to how Krishna says to follow it, like that. Then it's progressive.
If the devotee who is practicing devotional service in the very beginning to remember that he was suffering before he can enjoy the thing, then after some time he is losing the memory and he is suffering. But if he is performing his devotional service steady every day, but not in prison, he can enjoy
his devotional service is not bound by material. Material, whatever you do today, tomorrow the same thing won't make you happy. But devotional service is different. Whatever is done is there. The main thing is the steadiness. What we were making the point before is we have to be careful that our definition of happiness, when we're taking the material definition, we're looking for a spiritual definition. And two is when we look into the past, we have to remember how the mind works. It will forget what is there. It's there in the memory, but the mind doesn't worry about it so much. So one has to see. So by performing, so increasing devotional service means it can be the amount, but also generally would mean the quality. It's just a limit. There's 24 hours in a day, so you can't get past that. Then what are you going to do? So it's the quality. Then we have to see that we're fully engaged, and then in that fullness of engagement, that the quality that can unlimitedly increase.
Because that person had that kind of situation, or, you know, according to this
all time. Means the living entities reactions, their karma will always come through other living entities because Krishna is not involved. Yeah? So therefore, someone who is in a position to perform those things means they want a bad reaction. They're used as the medium. Right? Someone wants to perform good activities, they're used as the medium for good results. Someone who wants to perform bad activities are used as the medium for bad results. So because they perform improper activities, therefore they're going to get the reaction. Does that make some sense? Okay. So it's how you say, because the person that's there doesn't know that they're involved like that, because it's the modes of nature. These kind of things, material reactions, are coming from the modes of nature. Like that. And the person who is in the modes to give that is there. Like that. Therefore, we also have to be able to distinguish between reactions that are coming that are due to karma. You know, it means due to a physical reaction happening. And situations that are coming due to our bad mentality. These are all based on bad mentality, but it may be coming from a good source in a good way. But because of our mentality, we may take it badly. You understand? There has to be a distinction. That's why generally we see the devotees would prefer to receive the results of their reactions from the hands of devotees than from the non-devotees. Yeah, that's all.